very important meeting. For us, every meeting is important because we meet different entities. And as you are aware, that our constitutional mandate as the Petroleum Committee is to oversee the department and its entities. We pass the budget and we follow the money. This is what we are doing, and we do it to the best of our ability. The members of this committee are committed. They are committed individuals. And from day one, what we said as the Petroleum Committee is that, yes, our constitutional mandate is to oversee. We are also, but we are also here to support and to advise where advice is needed. And we have done that. As I said earlier, to the best of our ability. We recognize the fact that the department has 28 entities or 27 or 26. And that's a lot. 80% of the budget of the department goes to entities. This is why we have made it our business as the Petroleum Committee. That during these 5 years that we are here, we're going to sit on the department to ensure that it oversees, as we oversee, then they oversee what is happening in the entity, because that's where the money goes. And we would like to thank the people who are in the board of the entity, because we know that when you agree to be part of a board or a council, you are giving your time, your intellect, your ideas for the betterment of the society, the South African society. We know that the people are complaining that the AC board and councils are not paid as much as other board members are paid. And we've had this, and the department is looking into this. But in the meantime, we encourage the board members to do their work to the best of their ability, because we believe that the Department of Arts and Culture should be at the center of society. Because it is a department that is about who we are. So the only way to do it is to work very hard and ensure that people understand what this department is about. And there's no better way to do that than entities discharging their money. Which mandate should be aligned to the mandate of the Department of Justice. So we would like to welcome you and encourage you to be open. In our portfolio committee, we encourage people to be open and honest with us. And when we ask questions sometimes, we ask things that we know. We are like teachers. We ask something that we know. We just want to hear what you are going to say. So it's advisable to be as open and honest as possible so that we don't find ourselves, having heated arguments. We don't want heated arguments. We want information. And you go to ask questions, and you expect to hear Are there any apologies?
Yes, you do have apologies for your apology for Mr. Marshall.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. My name is Rosemary Mawate, and I'm CEO of the National Arts Council.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. My name is Kim Sanchami, CFO of the National Arts Council.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. My name is September. I'm the Deputy Director General of the Department of Human
Services. Good morning. My name is Lula Manda Bangudu from the Office of the Deputy in the African country.
Sisego Maphosa, PMG.
Morning. My name is Sisego Nchanga from the National Heritage Council, acting as General Manager of Heritage.
My name is Selanza from the National Heritage Council, from the Funding Unit.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members. We are now going to give over to the department to give us their overview on the National Heritage Council, and then immediately give over to the National Heritage Council.
Thank you very much, honorable chairperson, honorable members. Members of the council, the chairperson present here, as well as the CEOs of the institutions, colleagues. I will just be brief in just providing an overview of the National Heritage Council. You can see that slide speaks to the department overview, which shows that during the period under review, the National Heritage Council was able to achieve 88% their target. But also then, if you look at the three-year performance overview, it shows that how the performance of the National Heritage Council has evolved over time, starting in 2012 to 2015. It looks like they've done very well in terms of meeting their targets. And then the income and expenditure trend, it also shows a bit of improvement from the past, because if you look at 2013-2014, there were problems in terms of finances. Doesn't mean that now they've overcome that, but if you look at the performance, it's much more better. Then looking at the audit outcomes, I think that they have kind of sustained their performance, because from 2012 to 2013, they had unqualified audits with findings. And then maybe it's very important that one can just briefly look at the selected audit findings that have been outlined by the Auditor General, where 81% of the NHC's performance indicators were not well defined. Three tenders amounting to 326,000 were awarded to service providers without obtaining the necessary price quotation. That the NHC did not follow the supply chain management practices, resulting in the entity carrying regular expenditure amounting to 4.1 million. And also looking at the financial viability, current liabilities of the NHC in excess of the current assets by 102,000, which may negatively affect the entity's ability to settle short-term claims when they become due. NHC also did not make provision for contingent liability relating to the deceased employees. The entity is currently challenging the decision of the Commission for Conciliation and Arbitration pertaining to the reinstatement of the employee involved at the Labour Court. Now, in terms of governance, the Council of the National Heritage Council is fully constituted as of 6 September 2016. Look at the management, we do have the Chief Executive Officer, we also have the Chief Financial Officer. And then in terms of governance, we can go through that. But it shows the number of council members, number of meetings, number of committee meetings, and attendance rate of council meetings. We don't see any problems there. Things seem to be working very well. Then the challenges and interventions. Uncertainty regarding the implementation of the recommendations of the forensic investigation conducted by the Special Investigation Unit on Irregular Expenditure incurred by the NHC. In this case, the intervention by the DAC is that we are receiving an independent legal opinion on the matter. on weak financial position, that is the balance sheet of the NHC. This was brought to the attention of the NHC by the DAC through quarterly feedback. The progress on the implementation of financial controls to reduce the short-term liability to manageable levels will be monitored in the 2016-2017 financial year. In terms of the inadequate number of provincial representatives on the Council of the National Heritage Council, currently the Northern Cape and the Free State provinces are not represented. The Department of Arts and Culture includes the matter on the agenda of the mid-month for discussion with a view to have all provinces represented in the Council. That was just a snapshot on the chapter on the NHC. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We are not going to ask questions now, but we're going to give over to the last time of the council to give us a presentation.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'd like to express our appreciation for this opportunity to be in the face of the community. We are always encouraged by your expression of support and advice to us. I do remember one of the things you made clear before, that when it comes to the financial envelope, you might not be able to assist us directly there. But in terms of issues related to governance and whatever other advice you might benefit from, you are at our disposal. We are presenting on requested on the funding model of the National Heritage Council. And in our team has already introduced, we have the CEO, who will make the presentation, and also in our team is Mrs. Stephen Jamla. Probably not known to most of you, but he's our acting general manager. He has replaced Mr. Tendo Ramakoma, who will be left us a few months ago. And as already indicated, Ms. Stella Tramsey, who is our funding manager. So that is the details of the team. So I'll hand over to the team. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Honourable Members. I don't know what the, I'm not in control of the medical people, so I can speak to them. As the chairperson has already outlined, we got our brief was to talk to the funding body, which will cover that in opposition. And the chairperson, we will take it as that. I don't know what to try to extend it. Can you take it as read by the members and just talk to you? Yeah, so that we don't have to hear details so that we allow for the members time to answer in terms of questions. So that's very true. And thanks so much that you take it as read. Dealing with the mission and vision, source of funding and funding model, and resource mobilization, plan and impact. That's the menu really of our presentation. We don't want to bore you with mission and vision, which is there on the website. But when it comes to funding, The Heritage Council has about four functions that it funds. It funds community projects. It also is a local organization, lobbying for others in the community sector, but also a determining impact of funding in the leadership sector as well. And we talked about it. Now, if you look at our vision, which is really a nation proud of its African heritage, in our mission, we ask the question as to what is it that you will see if our vision is realized. That we want to ensure that South Africans have knowledge about their heritage, they have access to their heritage, they have benefit from the heritage, that also utilize heritage in their lives, and lastly, that they can behave in a way, in a manner that demonstrates their pride in heritage. Now, the funding is legislative mandate. The Inauspicious Act, which is section number 11, 1999, the part that deals with, you know, funding, in section 10, as we have outlined, that any state may grant to any person, organization, or institution in order to promote and develop national heritage activities and resources. The NHC is also called upon to monitor and coordinate the transmission of the sector, the specific emphasis of the development of heritage projects. We are called upon by the Legislative Act by our legislative mandate, one state, to generally support, nurture, and develop access to institutions and programs that promote and bring equity to heritage management. As I said, lobby to secure funding for the entire heritage, sector, heritage management, and to create public awareness about South African national pride. Those are in section 10, we're only selected those functions that are related to funding or relevant to funding. But the Heritage Council has 10 functions to fulfill in terms of the current legislation. But of course, we still do not know that at the current policy review that you may find the mandate of the Heritage Council much more streamlined. But we are called upon to utilize our resources to effectively promote the aims and objectives of this legislation, which is section number 11 of 1999, which is really about 10 functions if you look at it. But these, I've only selected those that are relevant to funding for the purpose of the presentation. Sources of funding of the NHC, of course, our major source of funding is the allocation from the Department of Arts and Culture. Section 12.1 of the Act provides that funds of the council shall consist of the following, which is the money appropriated by Parliament to enable it to perform a function, which is true vote 14 of the Department of Arts and Culture, the donation or contribution received from any source, trust funds invested, interest derived from investment, the money received from any source of funding. Now, the NHC has largely benefited from the lottery funding before the review of the lottery regulations, which really at the moment excludes organizations of the Heritage Council. But in the past 10 years or so, where the Heritage Council was allowed to participate in the lottery distribution process, we had actually benefited or utilized is that opportunity to find projects like Satma Award, the Liberation Group, the Young National Artists, the Unsung Heroes and Heroines Research Programs. So we utilized that opportunity before the job was closed. And then to some degree, the initiative also benefited from collaborative partnerships. We have had partnerships with provinces, municipalities, Chairperson will talk about what you call off-balance sheet activity. That actually has also enhanced our impact in the South African healthcare landscape. If you look at the allocation, We have actually tried to show the quantity, our location baseline, you know, selected a sample of those years from 2005 when the NHA was formed. If you look at the baseline, we were seeing ups and downs in the funding of the NHC. But we've seen a lot of inconsistencies in terms of, you know, how it has dropped, how it has actually, increased. For instance, if you look at 31st March 2008, we've seen the NHC funded 36 million. But there's been a sharp decline immediately after that, where we got 29 million from there, which is minus 22, which is 22% decrease for funding. Which again is, you know, following the financially escalated to 48, by the 8%, which is 15% from the previous. But again, another decline in the following year, 2011, which is 46 million, which is 4% decline. So these inconsistencies, you know, have actually affected our planning. And as you can see, you know, the ups and downs after the 31st March, 2018. That inconsistencies have really affected our planning because the growth capacity of administration of the NHC has not been in line with the, you know, the financial allocation from the Department of Housing Management. And as such, that on its own is also contributes to that instability. As the department has already, mentioned the deficit, which is the part of the reason actually of the deficit, because once you grow your administration, without knowing that, you know, you actually get a sharp, let's say, a decline of you can see, you know, in some of the years that I've already mentioned. So it affects what we already have contractual obligations, you know, of employees, some that we cannot actually change. But when it comes to that deficit, the NHC is, I mean, it was supported by the NHC, that was at about 100,000 or so. We've actually brought it down at the moment, I think, to about 36,000, and we are going to clean it by the end of the year, which will start out in the financial year on as the deficit, you know, so that we go back to our health state of affairs. I'm mentioning this in a way because it's important, but that once you have inconsistency in terms of the growth rate of the budget, it may affect the organization, especially when you already have, you know, commitments in the, you know, with staff and then so forth, and then that actually the intention of us showing that the data and allocations and the decreases in consistencies and so forth is really to show how that affects the planning. You know, the NHC is supposed to respond not only to funding; it responds to other functions in this legislative act. You know, popularization of heritage, education, awareness. You know, the transformation of the NHC sector. And so forth. So with these resources, we're just supposed to spread our wings so far as that we cover the you know, our money as far as we can. But of course, allocations 201.48 already, you know, demonstrated that actually shows those allocations. Again, praying that they're not going to decrease or decline, because once you plan according to that and then there's a memo that actually comes to say cut your budget, then it already affects your cash flows. You know, but we plan according to what the multi-year expenditure framework actually shows us or demonstrates, you know, so that we can fit in line. Knowing that, you know, in fact, as I say, and you know, praying that you're not going to survive in the gap. Overall speaking, the above amount demonstrates no significant changes from the allocation. That's actually the deck allocation. Now, talking the gist of the presentation, funding model. The funding model, we have had disbursement over 11 years, The National Health Council public funding supports various sectors, in particular financial, in a particular financial year, which are not limited to following. So we fund healthcare research and publication, but what we do, if you go to our site, there is what is called in the funding policy, do's and don'ts. In other words, Africans actually made aware to say that the National Council will fund the following categories, which is before the public call is made. So in our funding policy, you've got that already. Research, publication, documentary, heritage and education, heritage and youth, heritage and vision, heritage of the Khoisan communities, indigenous knowledge systems, liberation heritage, traditional leaders, community visits. The list is not exhaustive, that one, or conclusive. But if you look at the guide in terms of the governance structure of our funding, we are council. Council sets the parameters and say, this is how the allocations of the financial year must actually go. Recommended projects are approved for implementation, then go to council committees where projects are considered for approval. This is where the adjudication process takes place. Of course, then for recommended projects for approval, they go to the chief executive, really for implementation, and the funding committee, which the independent committee evaluates funding application and recommend to the management and council committees. Then the funding unit, what it does is issue that call for publication, but of course the funding unit, which is actually Mr. Lanzar just back here, is they are really responsible for implementation and monitoring evaluation. Now, continuation of the funding model. Funding progress flow, I've already mentioned that, you know, with the role of council, council committees, management, and of course, our funding is, mainstreamed according to heritage programs, strategic heritage interventions, as well as community heritage projects, which are those that are for funding. They are very projects for the country, for instance, like, let example, for, you know, heritage, of, you know, awards, you know, you call, you know, Ubuntu initiatives, other programs, you know, social cohesion programs, you know, that the Research Council initiates as, you know, as opposed to projects, the way we make call for the public to apply. So in the national service, I'm saying that we draw a line of distinction between strategic heritage projects, which are really championed by the Research Council in its strategy, but as well as heritage programs, which Research Council, you know, calls community, you know, to apply, which are really ones that we're considering in the state. Funding model, summary. We have heritage programs, I've already mentioned, flagship. I've already, mentioned the whole issue of distinction between projects and programs. Those programs, like liberation groups, education and others. By the way, the Liberation Group project, was an anchor project of the Research Council. Sometimes people forget that the Liberation Group emanated from the Research Council, but now we are glad that it's implemented by the department, but it originated from us. That's one of the proud milestones of the Research Council. And then we took that project, and then the moment it's in the vocabulary of cabinet, the vocabulary of parliament, and so forth. And as well as, of course, part of the performance indicators of the department. Education and advocacy, research and policy, position papers, programs, heritage education, schools, and so forth. That really, this column and other members speaks to heritage programs. Strategic heritage innovation, these innovations, which, you know, which I'm not going to really, read, this is actually explained. Then the far right is community projects. Those are the ones now that I've said we make a call for the public to apply. And in our strategy speaks to these three areas. This is how the resources, the public, resources actually allocated in the research council to further the aims and objectives of the council. The final disbursement followed by 3 years. If now I'm taking this far right column, excluding this one, because I'm now just going to contribute on the funding disbursement. Followed by 3 years, we have had the funding since its inception. I've already mentioned that the research council tried to distribute resources to satisfy its mandate, which is really more than 10 functions. But when it comes to the disbursement, through the call, this is what we've already made to the public. We make some emphasis that no allocation was made during certain periods during large number of funded projects rolling over implementation. What happened is that we place emphasis, Jefferson, on the monitoring and evaluation of projects. You don't want just to distribute funding that is not accounted for. We experienced some moments, more especially during the growth of the NHC, because most of our beneficiaries and rural communities, so it was not easy for people to account in our system. So we didn't want to distribute funds that were responsible. So we had to clean up that system to ensure that people understood there was accountability for projects. So that's why I presented that there was a bit of a slowness, so that we don't have a situation where we open the system without accountability from communities. We have to workshop those communities to go down to ensure that, for instance, if you go to rural communities, there is no price owners in Kufa, in Guyana, for instance, because people there, they cannot actually access, major companies. We have to ensure that we go down, we talk to universities, investors, to assist NGOs, to assist those communities to apply, in partnership and partner with them, because you exclude them, actually, and take, affluent communities, those who can actually afford the price of the cost of this well, and then so forth, and then really to be most of the time, established organization. So that really helps us. Because if you look at the funding of the research council, I will go to the impact later on. You will see, for instance, in the knowledge that has actually come through there. There's the era of resource organization. We have said, Chairperson, we want to speak a lot on that. We have said, once you get funding from the Department of Health and Guys, we can't fold our arms. Let's also see what is it that we can do out there to ensure that we actually raise funds ourselves. We have had, using the lobbying function of the NHC. Many organizations and beneficiary from the lobbying operated by the NHC. What we do, we actually, assist those organizations, to ensure that they actually get funding, even if it's not going to come to the research council. We have tried to establish what is called heritage fund, but of course this has there are some legal limitations and so far as that. We also tried to appoint an independent fundraiser to the research council, which has not yet really aided as well. But we see partnerships, for example, to municipalities, which I think have aided some results. I'll mention, for example, some of the projects that are coming through our financial activities, through, partnerships. Money that doesn't come to the research council, but we look at projects. I'm looking for example, the Mpumalanga Heritage research, which research, in Mpumalanga, a province, 2 million years back, that, didn't come from us, the money came from Mpumalanga province, but we use that transaction, to ensure that we add value in Mpumalanga. As such, Mpumalanga now is more than 10 sites that, came up through the research, because we deployed the researchers ourselves. And as I'm talking to you now, some of the sites now are major countries to UNESCO, like Makonde Mountain, which actually depicts that LES actually came from Mpumalanga as opposed to, in fact, that's opposing the credit to mankind, which is in Gauteng. So as we're talking, in the next 2 years now, we're going to have Mpumalanga, Makonjo Mountain actually being a well researched site. Through that intervention, it didn't actually come from the debt funding. We actually, it's a transaction between the research council and Mpumalanga. There are many homeless campaigns in the same case. the Home Affairs is now, we actually reported this thinking as well around that, you know, a project which we've been doing as an off-balance sheet, not coming from us, but we add value to a company, municipalities, KwaZulu-Natal, eThekwini, which we've seen actually our researchers working. We've got a team of researchers who are busy on that. I'm just mentioning that. That is the last one that says off-balance sheet allocations, and you see those allocations that working very well. So we don't want to rest on our laurels to say let's just work without the department is funding on us, but we go out to ensure that heritage is a strategic resource to nation building is actually utilized by provinces, municipalities. We utilize that edge that we have, and as well as knowledge and so forth. These are the off-balance sheet I've already spoken about. I've spoken about Mpumalanga, the Congo Revolt, Mapondwini, the Chuma Valley, the project, the one quarter in 100 years, Etewini Metropolitan Municipality, Heritage Route. Etewini is actually now, we're talking about the heavy route. We are talking about many others, which actually, they are now establishing a route, of the in the municipality through that. The Crystal Municipality, which was still that municipality, through their social partnership increasing. About 59 sites now. They even have a heritage trail on September where they take toilet, to do the heritage site. Now, this is very luxurious. The impact of our funding. What this country has not had, Chapter 17, is what is called impact, not just for us, for heritage countries. Across, in the 20 years of our democracy, heritage countries has raised the issue of an impact. That we need this impact, study. Whether we talk about infrastructure build, whether we talk about policy, we talk about, so that as we make a compelling case to the treasurer, because in treasurer, some people think that African culture is just a frivolous activity, but without us making an impact, a scientific study in that regard, to say that this is how African culture impacts the common economy, the social cohesion, and so forth. And therefore, press for more funding. The other something actually is actually doing that. In the quarter four, we're rolling out an impact study. To look at the impact of heritage, in society, be it in policy, be it in infrastructure, and so forth. And those results we hope that we're going to use, to ensure that we were better understood as a society. Of course, in spite of that, the NHC has managed actually to place heritage, in the from periphery to the mainstream of society. Many people now are talking about heritage, because of that. By the way, the Chairperson, the National Council has won through its magazine. Our magazine has now won Magazine of the Year, which is a new magazine, and we have actually also shown the members of Parliament, and thanks Chairperson also for his own commendation when you saw that magazine, and it won actually both public and private sector, when we were put, in context with them, and we actually won, about I think two prizes in that. And that's part of the reason actually why we see heritage actually being increasing in terms of not just monetary value, but in terms of awareness. That's the work of the Heritage Council. We have also discussed the community heritage project, in spite of the fact that we've got media resources, but we try to spread to our community. Without that funding, nobody would have actually had the singing of many. The only production of the singing of many comes from the Heritage Council, which is being celebrated next year, 2017. The whole issue of Makanda Nile, it came from the Heritage Council, Dabu Stillman. We came up with production on that film. The Nelson Mandela Grant, actually, some people don't know that it came to the Heritage Council funding. We went to the lottery, and Nelson Mandela Grant got 14 million, when Minister Mashabi was Minister of Agriculture. And it comes through our intervention in the sector. That's what Nelson Mandela Grant as we're talking. We're contributed to knowledge in many respects, more especially on organic, barefoot professors, people on the ground, who have actually, tested that. The whole issue of, impact in Chakatin is wrong. I'm not going to assume that. But let's say it's development opportunities. I'm going towards the end. Did you mention, we are also striking Chakatin for partnerships across these bodies, like houses of admissions, like the National Film and Media Foundation, the National Art Council, to ensure that there's this, synergy amongst ourselves so that there's an impact. And also avoid double dipping, because some people go, in fact, our workshop has found that there's really, with the forming body, trying to address that issue, or where people double dip, so that we can track, who has come to us, and then so forth. But also the department as well over the country. We also have, I must bring this in as part of my party short. I think what shatters in this white paper, review of white paper, is also going to help us to say who is really doing funding function. What's the role of the Department of Arts and Culture? What's the role of entity? Because sometimes there's confusion of duplication. Where certain projects are funded by the department, and you find the institutions like the Heritage Council, with a small budget. They try to also find the institution or certain programs, but they will get a bigger slice, maybe, in the from the department. And when you come, you find that you should have not funded the foundation. I make an example. The Steve Biko Foundation came to Russia Council and it was funded, I think about 600,000. At some point they got 30 million from the Department of Arts and Culture. Then we got that they also got money from the lottery. Now we said to ourselves, had we known that they got money from the Department of Arts and Culture, we should have maybe funded a grassroots organization somewhere, which is with the 600,000. We should have been something big to them. So I'm mentioning that maybe what they will assist us to streamline this funding. If they, who's funding, what's the role of the Department of Arts and Culture? Who's, and so on. I think, what's the role of entities, and so forth. Because sometimes there's a confusion in so far as the funding function is actually concerned. And then challenges, this is the last slide. The funding of heritage in Africa is due towards supporting infrastructure development, the project. Of course, the film must fall campaign will also impact on the money that must actually come to arts and culture. And which again, the whole issue of heritage will suffer, because some people see heritage as really something that we can do without, and yet it's important. Heritage, the criteria for funding department, especially provinces, the schools, heritage in favor of arts and cultural sports. Inability to liberate from composition of
yes.
And as well, difficulty of raising funds from the private sector. In losing that 2 minutes, I can mention just briefly that repositioning, the National Council has started now to reposition itself. We have this project, we have this program, more especially, for instance, I'll mention the intensification of the Nelson Mandela site for inscription in UNESCO, which is a part of the intervention that we'll see, as moving, to the current stage. The NSU will continue lobbying and engaging other sectors. We place the issue of the National Lottery before you, honorable members, because we have just been excluded in that. Likewise, the National Council and so forth. Then we recommend, the policy, the review process will bring positive results. It will explain now that we don't spend wings as everywhere. We are in one area or two areas, maybe research, knowledge, and so on, but not in funding as well. Review of amendments to the national regulation given impact, the approval of the special group by cabinet, support towards completion and submission of the nomination dossier of the Nelson Mandela Legacy Fund. But we are requesting the committee to support us in that. This is going to make impact in the country. And also give support for upward review of the budget allocation model for entities such as NHC, and avoid inconsistencies in that upward review of the budget to ensure that whatever we plan for the health zones.
Thank you very much for the presentation, and as usual, a lot of information is provided in your presentation. I think it really does assist us as a portfolio committee, and we hope that it will assist those people who come across it. The issue of stop for all the entities to stop working in silos, including the department, I think it's very important. The issue that has been raised here, that we need to come to the center, each and every one of us leaving our corners to come to the center, because there is work that needs to be done, and we all have a role to play. And the issue of double dipping, of people getting, you know, resources, we need to know what the right hand needs to know what the left hand is doing. Because if we don't do that, then people will be double dipping. But also looking at the issue of double dipping, how much do we give this organization that apply to us? This is why, as the portfolio committee, we've asked for the funding model of the department. I think the department now understands why we've been pestering them on their funding model. Who do you fund? Why do you fund those people? And how much do you allocate to these different categories of projects or programs that you fund? That's very important for you within the sector to know. It's important for the department to know what NAC is funding, what NAC is funding, all those entities are funding, so that you don't find yourself funding one program or one project. I think that is very important. And I will now give an opportunity to honorable members to ask questions and make comments. Honorable members, it's your opportunity to ask questions and to make comments. My questions on the presentation by the department, the acting DG made a statement on the income and expenditure trend. You don't change your writing, which makes it difficult for us. Can you take a note of this and number your slide so that you can say on slide number whatever? Because if you notice, it will be very difficult for us. We always bear it to say because we don't have to. On the income and expenditure trend, you said that we looked at the improvement, but you said it does not mean that they are out of that situation. And the CEO as well said they are trying to get out of the situation. And as the committee, as we always say, we want the concrete, you know, concrete action that shows that next year we will not be talking about this. We want those concrete actions as a portfolio committee. So can you indicate to us the concrete steps that you're going to do to embark on to ensure that the NHC doesn't find itself, even though it's the 39,000 that they will say that they are begging with as we speak. the issue of the audit finding. Also here at the portfolio committee, we want to know what is happening. These are the findings of the auditor general. What are your steps? What steps are you taking to ensure that the performance indicators are well defined? The issue of, you know, the issue about the issue of irregular expenditure and your all those issues that are raised in the findings. Can you tell us what is being done to address those issues? And as usual, department, Nina, you put the challenges there, but your interventions are always cold. Your interventions are, I don't know whether it's me. Your interventions of the department are always matter of fact. They are, you know, when they say this is the challenge, this is our intervention, it makes you cold. You're like, are they serious? Really? Is this all they're going to do to address this challenge? As a portfolio committee, as I always say, we want concrete stuff. We want things that you're going to do to fight the challenge, to ensure that the challenge is no longer there. But all, I don't know whether you don't apply your mind, you just see the umdana puni nangayendo say el gayans that terrible. What does it mean? Because umdana puni, I'm hoping that the prof will tell you what the umdana puni means. But this is what I always did. When I read through the interventions by DAC, I'm like, hey. And an issue would be going on for some time, but it's only now that they're saying that this is what they are planning to do. I don't know, department, really, I don't know whether you'll be serious when you give us your intervention. Honorable members, this is the opportunity. Honorable Mahon, Honorable Fort Boom, Honorable Mudeka, in that order.
What are the terms and conditions in relation to that?
The other issue, Chair, it relates to, we understand that the country does not have money now. And we welcome the program which the NSC has. And we appreciate the collaboration that happens together with the provincial government of Mpumalanga on the program that we have. My question is, do you intend approaching various provinces and local governments in particular for collaboration in five programs? Because you may not necessarily have resources that you need at your disposal, but other governments, spheres of government, local governments, and so on, may have such resources. Do you intend approaching them in future? The issue of the 326,000, which was which the NSC did not follow the proper processes of inviting quotations. What was it for? What were you passionate for this issue, Chair? And my question again relates to, I know that you are engaged in a number of programs. Can just be in brief, tell us, except the interventions that you have done with regard to the roads must fall, the facing of the issue. Can you just elaborate the other programs that you engage with information to your promotion of speech? Last time, Chair, we have engaged with the board of NHC in relation to the SIU investigation. And at that time, the board was new. I just want to understand whether now they have had that report and what is their view in relation to that, without actually awaiting legal advice by the Department of State or Department. What did you take? Because you have a report now, you have to get it. So those are the few issues that I wanted to raise. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity to ask a question. The only thing that I wanted to find out from first from the Heritage Council is within the report I know that they only speak basically they spoke to the funding model and the impact on the sector. Now given the impact on the sector, the shortfalls that this entity experiences is not actually indicated here. I know the CEO spoke about, I don't know how much spoke to it, it's rather in the air, but it's not indicated here, the basic shortfall. Secondly, to the department, I failed to see, but maybe it's necessary, it was necessary at the time, the forensic investigation into the affairs of the entity when seen against the background that it has a relatively positive audit outcome. And then certainly the questions surrounding governance issues. Now, what the department reported on was, if I look at the council meetings, committee meetings, audit committee meetings, all are down. It has specific reasons. One is, of course, of funding for such meetings, and the reason why the government was not really attended.
Thank you,
Jefferson, let us welcome both organizations. For to ask a continuing question to the Reverend of Urban Courage. In their presentation, the first quarter and the second quarter, they never reached their target. Both of them never reached their target. So my question is, when are you going to start to improve, and what are you doing differently to make sure that you don't always need a bigger piece of office part as a thing? And then of course more questions on the mental health council. Number one would be how do the communities, more especially the rural communities, access the funding, or how do you make sure that people know their rights for this funding? The following question will be, if NGOs or other partners of this rural uninformed community, what are you doing to make sure that they are not only applying for these people to benefit themselves? Because what we know, these people, they apply in most cases, and then they take the bigger chunk of that and only you link it to the community. In other words, you end up finding a person who has an application because he is educated and is informed to your application and he's getting everything, he's eating on behalf of the real beneficiary. And the other thing on page 24, where you talk about the mental opportunities, I'm more interested with the community stories. How do you access them? Which criteria are you using to identify this kind of people? And what are the requirements? Because there are a lot of these kind of people, others are very old, others are still young, but so well to get clarity on how you identify them.
Thank you,
Dr. Then another. Okay, you have highlighted an issue of that some communities they do bypass their authorities and it comes straight to you. So my question would be, do we have powers to direct your authorities to say there is this community there that needs help and they came straight to us, please help them? And if the answer is yes, how do you, how is the progress? Are they healthy? So that we can advise communities to go to the province, and then if the province don't have food, then they will come straight to the national. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honorable member. Let us first give the HC the opportunity to respond, and then we'll come to the end.
Thank you very much, honorable chairperson. Our apologies for the absence of the page number. Chairperson, in terms of the matter that you raised regarding income and expenditure trends, what concrete steps are we going to be taking? I must say, Chairperson, that what the CEO was referring to, I mean, if you look at the years, looking at the previous years, I'm talking about 2008, and that's where there were fluctuations in terms of the funds. But I'm sure that the chairperson might have just observed that there has been some kind of consistency since then. Now, the question that I'm responding to is, can we experience the same kind of fluctuation? And the answer is yes, there can be fluctuation, given the budget cuts that we're experiencing. But I must say that we have tried the best that we could, in fact, to take the cut as a department rather than our institution getting cut. I'm talking about the exercise that we have been involved in with the National Chamber. We took a lot of cuts rather than our institution. Now, while awaits the final allocations that are going to be shared with us around December, that's where we can then see whether we were successful enough to protect our institution from taking the cuts that we have taken. So those are the concrete steps that I can talk about there. But I think also in terms of the irregular expenditure, not irregular expenditure, but the findings in particular, I would allow maybe my colleagues to talk in terms of the specific, but as a department, there has been engagement with various institutions in terms of looking at the audit findings and to see what can be done to mitigate those findings. But just to say that ultimately, I think, there are things that we need to look at and say, how far can the department get involved? Yes, as an ultimate sponsor of the institution. But we create boards, we create councils to actually be the ones who are accountable to it, who must actually do that accountability whenever they are finding the things that they are the ones who should be more active than everybody else, because they are accountable to it. And I just think that we need to, we did not lose that particular point, because sometimes you might be, there could be perception that they were too were interfering with the work of the board.
I must run. must run. Tina, we give money to you for the department, and we expect you to account to us. You are the accounting officer of the budget that we appropriate to your department. We don't expect other people. We are just calling them in because they are given money by you. So interference and all that stuff, I think as a portfolio committee, we don't want to get into that. Tina, we expect you to account. We don't expect to profess to account. After this is account of who when you account to us. So we don't expect you telling us that you should interfere if you do that. If you can't do your job, tell us that I can't do my job, because this is what we are expecting of you, Tina. Because we give the money to you, and you give the money to somebody else. That somebody must account to you, you account to us. interference, you're actually going to be acting as the portfolio committee because we expect you to account for us.
Maybe just to proceed, Chairperson, I think that another point that has been raised by the CEO, which is the issue of funding happening both in the department as well as in the institution. And I think that we are working on that, and in fact, as we are engaged in the discussions around the white paper, we're beginning to say we need to have a very clear role classification between the work that is being done by institutions and the work that is actually being done by the department. If you were to ask me what model one would like to see, I would like the institutions that were set up to do the funding to be the ones that do the funding, other than the department, because I'm of the view that our responsibility is more on the formulation of policy, but also our responsibility is more of ensuring that we monitor the funding that has been given to various beneficiaries, rather than us also doing the funding. And then there's a point also that was raised by Honorable Makondo to say that can't there be any situation whereby the department and its funding agencies meet before even the allocations are being done to various beneficiaries in order to ensure that there is no duplication. And I must say that is a very, I think, good input that Honorable Makondo has made, that if indeed we continue as a department to have this kind of funding, it's going to be quite important that that happens. And of course, using all the forums that we have in the form of Heritage Forum, in the form of CEO's Forum, so that at least there's an item that begins to talk about funding and the funded beneficiaries. And I think that if we can actually do that, we can mitigate a large number of risks that are in existence as we speak. I would like to stop there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, SMCG. Honourable members, as we usually do, if there are any follow-ups on the issues, on the responses, let's follow up immediately because we want to give an opportunity at the end for follow-ups. If there are any follow-ups, as we are given the responses, let's do the follow-up immediately. Another one of that.
Chairperson, through you, I want the acting DG to clarify us from the input in the session now that these things, they, as DG, they don't have to deal with the funding and all that. That is he saying the Treasury mustn't give the development money? That's what I would, because the Treasury is transferring money to the department and the department must know how it's going to allocate to the entities and whatever. So if he's saying he doesn't want to accept money anymore because he wants to be policy and other things. I'm talking based on what he just said now. I just want clarity out of it.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you, Honorable Mudek. The issue here is not about us not wanting to receive money from Treasury, but I'm of the view on the room that we could redirect those resources to our funding agencies so that our funding agencies are the ones that disperse those funds, so that our funding agencies are the ones that monitor the impact of those funds. It doesn't mean that I'm saying that we don't want to receive money, but I'm just saying that from the point of view of the implementation of that particular function, since we've established the National Heritage Council as a funding body, we've established the National Film and Video Foundation as a funding body, so is the National Arts Council is a funding body. I'm of the view that we could actually eradicate the duplication of effort if we were to let those institutions be the ones that deal with the funding. And as a department, we don't deal with that particular item. but we are very strong in terms of ensuring that the policy is solid, the strategy is solid, and we ensure that these institutions, as implementing wings of government and of the department, are doing what we have said as policy and strategy. Thank you.
Another follow-up, another more
question? Yes, I got an answer, and that answer is not satisfactory, because still, as a department, they still have to account for whatever we've seen there. On how is he going to give the agencies and all that, it is very, we must deal with them that side. Similarly, we're dealing directly with him. As Chairperson has said, it doesn't change what Chairperson has already said.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. I think what we as a committee have said from the day we started our work in the portfolio committee is that the department, as it transfers 80% of the budget to the entities, it needs to beef up that unit within the department that deals with entities. Because you can't have 80% of your budget going to entities and only have 3 people working in the monitoring evaluation unit. So they have started the work of beefing up that unit. And we applaud them for that, but we still think it is not enough. But it's working. They are doing some work that is responding to the recommendation of the portfolio committee. Prof, do you want to, and CEO, do you want to respond to questions that were asked directly to you?
Yes, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Thanks for the questions. Thanks for the questions. In fact, they go to the nub of some of our challenges. And of course, as a council, we've been dealing with these issues. And we are regularly, you know, in discussions as to finding solutions. Just a comment to start with on the issue of the approach to the deficit. You were asking what concrete measures are being implemented or taken to ensure continued financial viability. And of course, as the council, that's a top priority in terms of our fiduciary duties. We inherited a situation where the council had been through its very vigorous engagement, responding to all sorts of requests from across the spectrum of society. Had kind of taken on a lot of tasks that were not necessarily sustainable going forward. So one of the priorities of the now not so new council was to try and focus the work of the council, especially in light of the shrinking fiscal envelope. And you see, the deficit, as you see it now, is deceptive in the sense that, in terms of the approved structure, HR structure, there are many positions that are not filled. Which means that if those positions had been filled, we would be seeing a much, you know, a worse situation than, you know, presents itself. So in terms of re-engineering the organization into a focused kind of direction, we have undertaken a review of the structure, which is ongoing. And in fact, it's supposed to be completed sometime this year, at the end of November. And in so doing, we think we're also positioning the and play a kind of vibrant role in the new dispensation that will come out, arise out of the discussion on the revision of the white paper. Now, the interesting point actually about the question you asked about discussions about how the envelope is divided. In fact, according to the Act, the Heritage Council is supposed to advise the minister in terms of the allocation of funds to other heritage-related bodies. That has never happened. We believe that it will be attended to in the white paper discussions. So we want to make that point then in terms of the overall picture. In terms of how we deal with the audit findings, we do those in terms of our review of the risk register all the time. Every meeting, management has to report to us in terms of what steps have been taken to address, you know, the findings, you know, that need attention or that have negative features. In terms of the governance issues, we inherited a situation where one of the identified threats to the organization was the dysfunctionality of the committees. We've revamped those, and we're satisfied that our committees are working, you know, fairly efficiently. And as things stand now, I think our threat is the major threat to, you know, the organization thriving going forward is actually the financial one. And as you have seen from the data, I don't know if one can use the term underfunded, but given our mandate, the case can be made that the council ought to receive more funding, but we know that the national picture, the demands on the fiscal are, you know, are very huge. So to that extent, relevant to this issue of the funding model, at the last meeting of our council on the 27th of October, in dealing with exactly the challenges relating to the funding issue, council observed that the effort of the NHC, that the effort that the NHC is putting into disbursement of the minuscule amount of 3 million, as you saw in the presentation, is not reasonable, taking into consideration that there is a funding manager, coordinator, and administrator whose total salary bill is over 2 million. Therefore, an effort must be made to increase the disbursement amount. In terms of the report, the average that is dispersed to projects, in reference to one of the questions, to projects, is on average 100,000. Now, that's a very small amount. So in terms of impact, you can't expect much impact. So the management then was therefore urged to speedily conduct the impact study, as its outcomes would make it easier for the NHC to present to potential funders having evidence-based outcomes. And of course, in that scenario, there's another issue that probably doesn't come out in the presentation. That small piece of money is unevenly distributed in terms of the national arena. You find that a vast number of projects are in the housing area, so leading to, you know, the inequalities that are so common in our society. So a related question about the funding service provider, who have abandoned that route at all, in no way. It was not a difficult decision, actually, because you see, did with things like that, you pay them on commission. And if they don't function, they don't get paid anything, and you're just wasting your time in a sense. The avenue of partnerships we find is a very promising one. I know we are in discussions with the Department of Military Veterans, for instance, in some of the areas they want to tackle, and they may well have a better funding base than us. I think I'll just comment now on the SIU aspect that has been raised, and just to observe that after the council decided to seek advice, legal advice on the matter, having considered that advice, at a meeting held on July 27th, the council resolved that the council makes and accepts the legal opinion received on this issue, and particularly the legal advice that as the third council of the NEC had on 3rd September 2010 considered and resolved not to institute disciplinary actions but to embark on corrective measures. The matter was fully and finally resolved, and thus the Council of the NAC is now functus officio. Now the lawyers will interpret that, which means that it can no longer raise the matter again unless by a review process through a court of law. And that's the legal advice that we got. Further, that the Council of the NAC knows that this matter was closed and therefore all its records should be amended and updated accordingly. Further, that the Council will communicate this position to the DEC and the Minister for them to update their records as well. Further, that the Council will further communicate this position to the AG to enable his office to amend its record accordingly, because one of the issues meditating against us getting a clean audit has been the recurrence of the unresolved issue around the recommendations of the SIU. And then finally, further than that, the criminal investigation is not within the jurisdiction and control of the NHC. However, in this inquiry, the NHC has established that no criminal investigation is pending against any individual. That is what was communicated to the minister, and the note from the department's report that they were seeking legal, independent legal opinion was actually to pronounce on these resolutions that were taken by the NHC. I hope that assists in at least updating the honorable members on that particular issue. Thank you.
Are there any other follow-ups, honorable members? Honorable McConnell?
Thanks very much. We also welcome the report. But I want the folks to understand your statement that you will not proceed to the disciplinary action because you view it as not an option but you would rather corrective measure.
That was the view of our predecessors.
Oh, that was the view.
That's what we say we cannot address as the new council.
But what I want to understand, because that decision was taken by the structure equivalent to
sure.
But did you understand the argument? Because people sometimes can take decisions.
Yeah.
And when they are on the door,
sure.
then when they take that decision, having a particular view in mind, but because you are equivalent to them, you may not necessarily be able to do. But do you understand the reasoning behind and what is your interpretation by corrective measures so that we understand what we are going to do? The aim is to make sure that this does not occur again. Thanks.
In fact, before we sort leader
of can we take another follow-up from before? Can we switch off? Another
question? Okay. I just want to check. Maybe perhaps I don't know whether our legal people are here, but the side of Parliament. Because my view is, if it's like what they are saying, that who can be value of course. In other words, we are setting a very bad precedent that people can generally be better. Is there a way, perhaps, in Parliament, where Parliament can do a review of the matter?
Yes. Before that suggestion is taken up, it might be worthwhile for the committee, for the portfolio committee, through the indulgence of the minister, to actually study, you know, the legal opinion on the matter, because it's very detailed and it does answer the question. And the issue is, the critical issue is whether they exercise their minds on the issue. And the question to that, the answer to that is yes, and opted for corrective measures rather than disciplinary action. So it's a very detailed opinion, and we have no. And in fact, the challenge is that it can be taken up on judicial review, but it cannot be done by us. See, because it was our decision in the terms that you have outlined that this is a successor body. So, but I would plead that however the portfolio committee decides to deal with this, the committee members must acquaint themselves with the full details and the various legal opinions on the
matter. With your permission, Chair, it's fine. I think we will interact with the minister. But what I wanted from the Chair of the Council of NHC, it is that the decision has been taken by the board. Nobody is against that. But the matter is left with you. The previous board that has taken that decision is gone. And this corrective measure, it is left with you. Explain it to me. What does that entail?
No, the main issue, you see, it's in a way there's demerit in discussing the matter in this form, because one just gets will only refer to snippets of the, you know, the report, etc. But the main issues there were around supply chain management issues, right? And that our predecessors, having made the assessment that whatever maladministration had taken place, the council derived value from those transactions, and there was no suggestion of any fraudulent activity or whatever. Rather, it showed weaknesses in the supply chain management. This division in following treasury regulations in terms of effecting transactions. So they set up a training you know, agenda and the staffing of that division and monitoring mechanisms to make sure that there's no recurrence on all that. So that was their approach to it, but rather than a disciplinary issue. I don't know if that's the approach that I have.
Not saying Chair, it does, but I still have a problem on how it has been done. Because it does not follow due process. And we're not saying, if we say institute disciplinary processes, we're not saying fire people. But there were people who were involved in making sure that these transactions happen the way they are. And in their personal file, there will be nothing that indicates that they've committed something wrong.
Yes.
That's a problem to me.
Yeah, sorry.
The process should have been followed. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that, I don't know, yeah, I think,
yeah.
I do take your point, Honorable Nama, but I suspect that the point you're making about due process in terms of that issue, maybe we can actually apply it to now. The matter is at a point where there are legal opinions on the matter. And the minister, the report from the department is that the opinion on which our council based its decision is being subjected to another assessment. So I think we ought to await the outcome of that, because otherwise we are dealing with it without the necessary, understandably, without the necessary legal nuances, you know, in terms of the whole picture. Thank you.
Thank you very much,
Prof.
Professor
Chair.
I'm just I think the department should have a say as well, because they have it in their presentation. And they are trying to see independent and independent legal opinion in the net. Can they elaborate?
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you, Honorable Members. I think that the Prof has actually, or the chairperson of the Council has indicated a principle of food. Functus officio.
Yes,
that's what we are actually testing. I'll tell you why we're testing, because we want to ensure that this matter is actually finally resolved. And whoever will come afterwards will realize that there was due diligence, everything was done. Now, where the principle becomes a bit problematic is that when the council dealt with the matter, and the council that we are referring to, the fiscal council, I think they were acting on the basis of the finding of the Oyster Chamber. They were not acting on the basis of the SIE. Now, subsequent to all that has been said and done, there was then the release of the SIE report, specific recommendation. And that's what we want to test. That the principle of functus officio applies despite the fact that subsequent to the activities of the previous board, then there was then an SIU report with specific recommendations. Mm-hmm. Have those recommendations been acted upon, specifically closed? I think that's where things are, and I'm sure that we will definitely get to that point where we have a very clear option. That's all that we can highlight.
Mm-hmm.
There was a, I think in a meeting that the president not chair a few weeks ago, a case like this, where the department, the committee sent back the entity and the department to look at an issue that I think is a bit similar to this, where you have a council, a board, not acting according to the recommendation of a finding. Do you remember, Honorable Member? I was not there. I was not here in that meeting. But this is the report that I have. So I think it's important for the department, as I said earlier, because we give the funding to the department and it transfers the budget to the entity to ensure that whatever happens in the entity is what should be happening. Whatever happens there is the right thing. This is taxpayers' money. And if it's in the AG's report, I mean, the AG's report is out there for everyone to see. And as Honorable Sulebi was saying, you create a precedent where people are going to say, but you did not act. In this case, this is how you acted. Why should you act in this manner in my case? So I think it's important for the entity and the department to ensure that you do the right thing all the time. So I think what needs to happen is that we need to get the documents that you are referring to from, because here in Parliament, we do have our own legal unit, so that we find counsel from our own legal unit to say, this is what has happened, this is what is happening, this is what the council is saying, this is what the department is saying, come up as the legal unit of Parliament with your own findings or your own advice to us as the committee. Because as the committee, what we don't want is to leave matters hanging. Because after 5 years, when we left the state, people will always refer to things that were discussed in our committee and they were never taken through. And we don't want that legacy in this committee. We want things to be finalized. Those things that we found here, those things that happened during our reign should be resolved so that everybody can be certain that everything has been dealt with accordingly. So I think it's important for us to resolve on this matter, to say, can we get the document? We are going to talk to the department. We are going to talk to our own legal, to the Parliament legal unit, so that at the end of the day, everyone gets to the same point. Because as it is now, we are talking
at
cross purposes, and we are miles apart. But and I think what's important is that we get to a point where we say, let's put this matter to rest.
Yes, I appreciate that, Chairperson. Just one point, though. I'm not certain that what you are suggesting, just that the way you are suggesting we should proceed is the best one. You see, we have been dealing with the minister. We have been responding to his queries and requests. In terms of the reporting,
can you switch off? Hello, Prof. Here at the portfolio committee, we have power to get information from you. Not via the minister, not via anybody. We have power to say, Prof, can you give us this information? We have power to subpoena you to the committee. If you say, no, I can't because I've not seen the minister yet, Tina, we can call you to come here and present to us whatever. So I'm saying to you now, the portfolio committee is going to get the documents. Maybe the department does have the documents.
Yes, they are the source.
But we don't have props. We are not obliged We are not obliged
to
your baby to go through whoever. Sina, what we are
being
Sina, what we are, what our mandate is to get whatever we want to get from you, not via the minister, but we can have the courtesy of informing the department that this is the information that you will be getting.
Sure.
Fortunately, the department is here.
Yeah.
So we can just call you, Jabu can just call you and ask for information.
Yeah.
That doesn't have to go through the department.
Sure.
So this is what you are going to do, to ask for the document so that we go to our own legal unit so that we get advice. And you've received advice. The department is receiving advice. We are going to get advice. So we are going to bring this together and come up with something that's going to ensure that we reach, you know, a space where we say, let's put the matter to rest. Now, do you think we can ask documents from you.
Yes.
So that's it from
yes.
Brother. I just
want
to say.
I just want to apologize, Chairperson, for you know my kind of reaction. You know, it's because it took us I don't know how many a full year to actually get that report from the department. So anything to do with passing information in terms of that report. In terms of the legal opinion that we have, that we can, you know, but we haven't seen the source documents. We saw a summary and recommendations. So I think that's why I'm kind of saying to get everything, you know, to be sent to the lawyers. You know, let's talk about that.
Okay.
But we accept your position.
The department knows that we say we want the whole thing, the whole report now, and they give it to us. They know it. Honorable Fatwan?
No, I just want to remind the Prof. Tina about the petition.
Chairperson, some of us we are new in this parliament. Maybe Jonathan. I think the entity is accounting to the department, but as they do account to us as well. But they account to the department because the department is allocating some funds to the entity. But I'm surprised now if the department in this meeting is also posing questions to the entity instead of helping the entity to answer, because I think all of them they must be informed about the issues that they are bringing to this meeting. So now I hear the acting director general asking questions to the chairperson that you implemented those recommendations instead of him answering. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I take note of the issues, Honorable Makondo.
No, thank you, Chair. We are not done with this matter, Chair. I think we'll have a session again to discuss about it, but let's allow those processes that are going to take place so that we have this meeting again and finalize. And I want to suggest, Chair, that we can proceed because it seems we may not put this matter to an end now because there are a lot of things that are going to be done behind the scenes so that we have our meeting again. I suggest that maybe we can proceed.
Yeah, in fact,
Honorable
Member, this is what I said, what we need to do is to test the processes and then in the next meeting, that we put the matter to rest after we've done all the things that we said we are going to do.
the issue raised by Honorable Mudeka, I think department, this is, you know, that the portfolio committee, this is why in the first place we are saying that before any entity, we invented this because we felt that the department doesn't have its thumb, you know, on the path. So before any entity reports, it's the department that gives an overview. And this is to ensure that the department knows what is happening in the entity. And I think this is what is happening now, to ensure that your finger is on the car. And we will now, Jabu, I think you have noted what you are supposed to do. The department, you will give us your own the legal advice that you are seeking. How long do you think this will take? When can we get this?
I think that within the week.
As soon as we get this legal opinion, we have the council's legal opinion, we will seek our own legal opinion, and then we will come together. But yes, I think we do need, maybe even if it's a copy, so that the legal unit can have all the facts. Thank you very much, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. Can we have the National Arts Council presentation?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I will also do an overview of the National Arts Council, maybe starting with the mandate. The National Arts Council was established in terms of the National Arts Council Act of 1997, Act number 56. It is mandated to allocate public funds to artists, cultural institutions, non-governmental organizations and community-based organizations in order to promote the creation, teaching, and dissemination of literature, oral history, storytelling, music, dance, theater, opera, design, visual arts, and crafts, which could reflect the country's diversity. Provide study bursaries in the fields of arts and culture to practitioners, administrators, and educators, and carry out research, especially regarding policies linked to its mandate, and also executive investigations and research at the request of the minister. If you look at the performance of our view as of 30 June 2016, you can see that it has done well because it has been able to achieve 90% of its target. Now, if you look at the 3-year performance of our view, you can see also that there has been a progress from 2013 to 2016. There has been a rise in terms of the performance of the National Arts Council. And then also the 3-year income and expenditure trends, where we are able to see the amount of money that government gives, the grants that are given by government, as well as the expenditure. And you can see there that there is a deficit in terms of the finances of the. Now, looking at the audit outcomes, Chairperson, honorable members, there's been a great deal of improvement. I mean, if you look at the fact that 2013-2014, there was a qualified audit outcome, but they jumped straight from the qualification to clean audit for both 2014-15 and 2015-2016, which is a great deal of improvement. Now, looking at the setup of governance at NAC, the National Arts Council team is operating under the guidance of the Chief Executive Officer, the CEO, who is assisted by a team of five managers who report directly to her. The NAC has also appointed the Chief Financial Officer to administer its financial affairs, the gentleman next to me here. The National Arts Council comprises of 34 employees. Now, in terms of the Accounting Authority Board, the Minister of Arts and Culture appointed the board of the National Arts Council for the period 1st September 2015 to 31st August 2019. Subsequent to the appointment of the board of the National Arts Council, the department received complaints from the members of the arts sector pertaining to the process that was followed in appointing the council. I'll explain. The concerns of the sector relate to the two steps of the appointment process that were not followed. Namely, it was the publishing of the names of nominated candidates to allow the members of the public to comment on the names of the potential board members of the NAC. So that's what was supposed to be done, to publish these names so that members of the public can comment on the names that had been shortlisted. Also, publishing of the date or the dates of the interviews to enable members of the public to participate in the appointment process as provided for in the National Arts Council Act. Subsequently, the Minister of Arts and Culture dissolved the board of the National Council on 30 August 2016 to avoid governance vacuum at the National Arts Council. The Minister of Arts and Culture applied Section 49(1) of the Public Finance Management Act. And in terms of this act, if the public entity does not have a controlling body, the CEO is the accounting authority for that public entity. Consequently, the CEO of the National Arts Council is the accounting authority of the entity until a new board is appointed. I think it's now appropriate for me to then indicate where things are in terms of the appointment of the board. The department published an advertisement in various national newspapers calling for nominations of candidates to serve on the board of the National Arts Council. The call for nominations closed on the 23rd of September 2016. The minister appointed an independent panel comprising of four members to assist in identifying candidates that are deemed to be suitable to serve on the board of National Arts Council. The panel is expected to conclude its work on 21 November 2016. In fact, over this previous weekend that we are coming from, they were at work. The department is anticipating to finalize the appointment of the board of the National Arts Council before the end of November 2016. Appointment letters to successful candidates are expected to be sent at least by the 1st of December 2016. Then, what would follow is the induction of the newly appointed board of the National Arts Council, which is scheduled to take place on 19 and 20 January 2017. Sorry for that term, misprint. January 2017. Then the next slide talks about the selected governance structures and meetings held. I'm not going to go there. Maybe it's very important to go straight to the legislative constraints, where we say the National Arts Council provides for a huge number of board members and the board subcommittee. This is threatening the ability of the National Arts Council to sustain its governance. The act states that the grant received from the Department of Arts and Culture must be divided into the ratio of 75 to 25 for both investment and administration respectively. The above provision implies that more money should be available for disbursement and very limited funding is provided for the day-to-day operations of the National Arts Council. I would like to stop here, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Member. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honourable Members. Thank you for the privilege. Please know that we appreciate it. You specifically asked us to present on our state of governance. This to us indicates that you may be concerned about the state of governance in the NEC. At the outset, I wish to assure you that
although we are not in an ideal situation, all is at hand. The NSC management team has worked extremely hard to stabilize the organization, and we intend to establish and embed a track record of not only good governance, but exceptional governance. That was by way of introduction. Now, I'd actually like to talk about how we view governance, and this is not meant to lecture you, but it applies to the philosophy that leadership and governance go hand in hand. We also believe that governance is indispensable to the growth of our entity. We promote good governance as integral to running our entity and to deliver on the benefits, such as ethical culture, enhancing performance, and value creation. Now, the acting DG has already spoken about the governance issue.
Excuse me, as the portfolio committee, we're looking at the document that we have, and it's not what we are seeing on the screen. Can this be explained to us? Because as the portfolio committee, we have asked the department that a presentation is going to be made, it's good for the portfolio committee to have it 10 days before the presentation. But the one that we have does not look like what you are presenting now. Can we get an explanation, maybe from the department or from you? We don't know.
If I may check, so we send that presentation through, but we believe that it could not be downloaded as it was in a format that the current secretariat could not download. This is what we were told.
We didn't receive it. I explained to you that there was something to it. So that's why I sent you the one that we have from the department, the one that the members we have now. So we don't have the new one.
I really don't want to make an excuse. However, we were hit by a malware, a ransomware. We haven't actually had emails for the past 8 days. But I'm told by a communications officer that she did try and send it through. We really would like to apologize. How would you like us to proceed?
Can members advise on how we proceed if we're going to see the presentation now? Can members advise? Because what usually happens is that we've asked to receive a presentation. It will mean that we have to go line by line with your presentation, which I don't think is conducive for the meeting that we have and the time that we have. Can members advise? Is it totally different from what we have? Is it totally, totally different from the ones that we have?
It does actually give more meat to what it is that a government structure can take. So it does go into a bit of more detail than what is on time.
Do you have an idea of what we have?
I'm afraid we haven't seen this before.
I would have to come from. Where does it come from? Hey, this one is warm.
Yeah, the mainest
one. This one is sushi. Can you get an explanation from NAC of this? The department says this came from you. Can we get an explanation? Do you want to explain? Okay.
The department, I think, is in the process for a presentation around the 22nd of October, which they received. However, that presentation, it happened while the CEO was overseas. Subsequent to that, we received a request that we must submit a presentation to you.
and I think it was the 2nd of November that I was mistaken. And that's the presentation that was sent by the people.
Which
was sent to the Secretary of Parliament by the CJ, the one that the CEO is presenting.
We have not received it. We only see it now. The only one that we have is that one that was sent through the department. Remember, that's how it's supposed to be done, actually. The department has to see your report before they come to us. So, and the other thing, I don't know, I'm going to report.
Okay, Honourable Members, can you make concrete proposals? Honourable Mudek?
Chairperson, I think this communication could be done between the department and ETH not come to an end. Because it is communication in town. Department has what they don't know. They have what the department doesn't have. And it's causing confusion. What must happen is that let them come next time. Because here we need to go through this thing, make notes, and then make sure that they are, the reason why they are here is achieved. Unlike just crashing and leaving them go like that, cross a phrase, you know, just with people.
I've read this one. The small one. And it looks like I've wasted my time preparing for this portfolio comment. And the one that we are reviewing now, I think it's a detailed one. I just perused it. There's a lot of information. I'm not so sure if unless people have got no other business that we're going to do except the NEA. And if we have got other business, I don't think we are going to finish. Because it's a very thick document. We need to also to even prepare ourselves before we go to this document. We understand the communication breakdown, but we can't do these things of time. So I don't think we will be proper chair. It will be proper if we continue with this presentation when we're just to take it from just here now.
So, members, I think that we are not engaging with the presentation. We will take the presentation, go through it, because this is what we do. We take the presentation, we read through it, the researcher of the portfolio committee does some research on the issues that is raised here, so that you don't just give us information. Someone goes out to look, to research if what you are saying is what is happening, and advise us accordingly. So when you present to us, as I said earlier, sometimes you present things that we know already, that have been confirmed by the researcher, because we have researchers allocated to every portfolio committee, so that they do research on what you tell us you are doing and what you have done. So if we receive a document at the meeting, it's not easy for us as the portfolio committee to engage with the report. But I think with that, as this may, as Honorable Makondo, I also have read that Smolanyana report, the report that was sent to us earlier. And the, I think the issue of governance, and I feel I need to ask this question, I will die if I don't ask it, please, honorable member. The issue of the council of board, what happened? Because I've heard the stories about it, I've heard from your report as the department, from your presentation, what happened there. Can you tell the honourable member what actually happened on the issue of the board? Because as it is, what there is no board, can you tell us what happened?
Chair, just to say that the mistake was from our side. Maybe let's just conclude that right from the beginning. In terms of the law, we have to publish the name that we have gathered through advertisement, so that members of the public can then comment on those names before any other process is taken. But also, we are supposed to be giving the date or dates when the interviews are going to be taking place, because in terms of the law, the members of the public that would like to participate in that process, we observe as people are interviewed, they need to be given that opportunity. But that is not happening. And I've said that that was a mistake. It's a mistake from the department. Hence, the minister, because of the pressure from the department. Also, just by virtue of the fact that he respects the law and the passage of the law, he had to then sit down with the board that has been appointed, explain the situation before the dissolution of that board and reach that.
Who was supposed to ensure that this happened? And, okay, before you respond to my question, Honorable Kulezi has to hand up. Honorable Modega, that's it.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sure Chairperson, we're talking about issues of good governance. Now, I just want to check how much has cost the department because of the mistake.
Chairperson, I think my question will add better to your question. Didn't the department know about this loss? Or they just engaging this process without considering the law that they have to follow? And who is the culprit and what happened to that person? Because we cannot just go on wasting money and people's time and no consequences of that. Thank you very much.
Can you respond to those questions?
Maybe just to say that I will respond to some and my colleagues might just want to add in terms of the detail. I want to say, honourable members, this matter was very taken very seriously in such a way that there was a written warning to the relevant opposition on this matter, because we knew that we were supposed to do things in a correct way, but that did not happen. So there had to be consequences on that particular note. But in terms of the amount, I'm not sure whether my colleagues can also assist in terms of any additional information. I would request maybe Dr. Kiso to come to my support by trying to respond.
I cannot say offhand right now as to, but you know, the advert costs about 26,000 rand. Then you will have to fly in candidates for interviews, so we'll have to collect that information for you, but it is less than 100,000 rand. So that is basically the cost that will be sort of associated with this. But the actual figure, I think we'll just have to go and punch the numbers back at home in the department and then refer back to the department. The loss, yes, I think we knew about the loss. And I think I need to also just to remind the committee that that was the time when we had about 11 vacancies. Or boards that were vacant. during 20, when the new administration came to office. We had about 11 councils that were vacant at that point in time. So there was a lot of delay that happened in terms of the approvals and a whole range of other things that happened in the department. Not to say that those are excuses, but to say that those are some of the contributing factors. The laws were there and certain steps were omitted in the process of that pressure. And yes, there were consequent management. There is a deputy director who was responsible for this process. I did get the warning as the official, if you want the name of the official who received the warning was myself, because again, I had to take responsibility for all of that, even though I have a deputy director and a director who actually are running those processes below me, but I'm the one who signed off on those submissions and actually allowed the process to continue. So I took that responsibility and I received the warning.
I think as committee will appreciate the exact amount as Honourable Kulezi has asked that we get the exact amount, how much was wasteful expenditure that has been carried. Because if for instance if we take the team together and ask the entity how has this impacted on them as the entity. Because at the end of the day, now the CEO has to be the accounting authority as well. And we know that this is not the best way to do things. If a CEO becomes also an accounting officer in an entity, that's a lot of work and it has a lot of implications. So departments, please do the right thing all the time. I really pity the minister who has to the best the whole thing. It's like, you know, it's not good at all. But do you want to say anything, CEO, on the impact that this has on you?
Just to put it in profusely, first of all, for wasting the committee's time in terms of the presentation. And to say that yes, it does have an adverse impact. It is not an ideal situation to be in. We have tried a lot. We've actually put our all in stabilizing the entity. So it would be helpful. We are encouraged that the interviews have taken place, and let me see a date now. This says in January the council will be in place. So we're grateful for that.
You're
seeing
the date now?
Didn't
you know before you came to the meeting?
We knew about the interview, but we didn't realize when the compute process would be better.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think as the committee department, you need to strengthen the communication with the entity. This is what we've always been saying. They need to know exactly what is going to happen and when it's going to happen. Because entities are like your part of your family. So take them through with each and every step to say, because if you don't know when something is going to happen, if your ex, the way you act, you know, doesn't respond to what is going to happen. So I think it's important to strengthen the communication with your entities as much as you can. But we, as I said earlier, we also, as a portfolio committee, we know that you've wasted your time, resources to be here, but as I said earlier, we need to have some more time on your presentation before we come to the portfolio committee. And we apologize as well, but there's nothing that you can do that can ease this pain. We want to also, as the portfolio committee, to commend you on the work that you're doing. We know it's not easy. If you talk about funding agencies, those agencies that are giving funding, so everybody would like to get funding. But as long as you have
a good funding model that tells who you fund, how you fund, when you fund, then I think your problem would not be as much as we would anticipate as a comment. But we are now going to another member. Do you have anything else to say?
I don't know if it matters, we didn't deal with the report. But I had this thing that they're complaining about the large number of the board members. So maybe it's a high time that the department should make a proposal in terms of changing or amending the legislation in terms of the numbers of board, because then it's alarming. When you look at 18 members, as much as five of them perhaps are being paid by the provinces, but still it's an alarming number. Maybe they should really consider sitting down and then we amend the legislation, because it's a small entity and the budget is not that big, with only 34 staff members and then 18 members of the board. That's too much. Thank you.
That's a concrete proposal that we need to look at. And when you look at the legislation, I think it's important, department, for you to look at all the legislations that are there and to look at the acts that you'd like to amend, so that you plan them according to the time that we have, because you don't just wake up one day and amend an act. You need, there are processes that are involved. So you sit down, you look, you evaluate the acts that are there, and you see those that you want to amend, and you have a roadmap in place. So I think this is something that you need to go back with, looking at this act, and then maybe another act that you want to amend. Because as the committee, we are asked every day, what amendments do we have? We don't have any as the portfolio committee. So I think you need to look into that as well. I think we will step off the NAC and all the best in the work that you do. We will now look at the AC, matters arising. Do you have anything?
I'll request the DDG ACPD to take us to the new items.
Yes, I hear that we have received the minutes that we asked for in our last meeting. The minutes shows the key. We do have the minutes. Can we have an update on bullet one and bullet two, if there's anything?
Okay, so we have submitted an updated report on the African Relief Association, where I believe that members last week had requested an indication of exactly how much money had been contracted with between the Department and the South African Relief Association since the 2013 settlement agreement, and that information has now been provided in the report, as well as the Portfolio Committee has requested a copy of the audit report on the matter referred to us by Mr. Mieter of the South African Relief Association, with regard to what he felt was irregularities at the National Health Council. So that audit report has been provided. The indication in the report is that at this point the South African Roadies Association from 2013 to currently holds and has held about 21 million rand worth of contractual obligations. The largest, of course, being the renovation project, which, as the Portfolio Committee is aware, continues to be a substantive sticking point. In essence, given the budget cuts, we are really going to struggle to make these funds available in subsequent financial years. So that is the update on the South African Roadies Association at the moment and the request of the committee. With regards to bullet point number two, in essence, it's a fairly challenging task, Chairperson, as I'm sure has been outlined by the acting DG last week. So what we're currently doing is disaggregating all of the information that we have, because obviously we support a large number of cultural events. The bulk of them are festivals. And beginning to clarify the concepts of feasibility, which essentially happens before, and impact, which happens after. Now, feasibility on every single project that we do may not be possible, but at the end of the day, there are certain kinds of things that we can do to make it a condition of funding that there is a feasibility study. But obviously, for smaller community festivals and those kinds of things, it would need to be an appropriate tool that would need to be tied in. There are a variety of monitoring and evaluation impact studies which are currently ongoing through the Cultural Observatory. Those are in individual phases and at individual levels at the moment. By the end of the fourth quarter, we will have a consolidated report looking at the impact of selected projects that have gone through a monitoring and evaluation framework which has been developed by the Cultural Observatory. So, in essence, the portfolio committee has asked when will there be an indication, and what I'd like to do is to try and say to the portfolio committee, can we provide you with the complete list of all of the cultural events supported since the genesis of the Mzansi Golden Economy program in your first meeting in February 2017? That will be from 2012, 2013 through, with all of the reasons as to why we supported these events. We will then have the consolidated report from the Cultural Observatory at the end of March, at the end of the financial year. And by essentially June, we'd be able to then provide a consolidated view that really does engage in a substantive form with the issues that were raised by the Portfolio Committee. We may, in fact, have to commission a subsequent impact study, depending on how the information comes out of the works in progress at the moment, which is why I'm asking for a fairly long leeway to deliver this report, but I'm confident that by May, June, preferably June 2017, we will be able to respond comprehensively to this issue as has been raised by the Portfolio Committee.
Honourable members, are there any questions or comments on the two issues, first SARA and then the feasibility report? Honourable Martin?
Chair, I want to ask this. Just one question. When did you meet with Sarah last time? When did you meet with her?
There's been a subsequent level of engagement. So the last time that I personally met with Sarah was in the Deputy Public Protector's office in April of this year. But there have been subsequent engagement between officials of the department and the South African Royalties Association. So, and there is, of course, ongoing correspondence between ourselves and ongoing reporting to the Deputy Public Protector. So I'd have to get back to you, sir, just on what matters there have been engagements with SARA on, but I personally have last met with them in April of this year.
Okay. The second question, Ken. Who is meeting with staff from the department?
Honourable member, do you have any questions before they respond? Honourable member.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think that the answer. The first question was not answered, but anyway, let me ask my question. My question will be, this renovation of the Zara House, there was a settlement agreement. Now, that settlement agreement speak about the way the department wants to do it, because I'm talking on this issue of 15 million. That the settlement agreement or the 50 million is something else outside the settlement agreement.
Can I
My apologies, Chair, because I wanted to make a follow-up to the question, the first question that was asked by Madam McCombie. I also was part of the meeting that the DDG is referring to. But subsequent to that, I can't locate the month and date. There is a time where Mr. Nyatera came to my office. It was not an arranged meeting, but I received him in my office. So we were discussing the issues of backstage academy. I think that was the issue that we spoke about that day. So that's what they didn't complement the first question. Maybe I'm then have to take the matter that has been raised by Honorable Mugeka. The 15 million that we are talking about is part of implementing the settlement agreement. But as we have indicated before, where we differ is the how of it, with availed resources, the time, and even human resources to a certain degree, and otherwise. But of course, that's not yet acceptable. But the 15 million that we're talking about is part of the settlement. In fact, we have even acted over and above what originally was the case, but as a way of trying to even get closer and closer to Mr. Nyatera, we have even said, look, at some point it was a 10 million that was spoken about, but we said we understand that when it comes to the infrastructure programs, you might even need experts to even come and look at the entire building and make some suggestions, and so we do understand that. Therefore, we added that 5 million, which was not necessarily part of the agreement before. Thank you.
Do you want to say something on it? I just wanted to respond to the question. Because of the nature of the contractual engagement that we have with SARA, there are live projects in motion. So there are a variety of engagements at project level with officials from SARA as well as Mr. Nyatera. So and I think ADG's comment also helped to round it out. Because there are multiple levels of engagement with SARA, we meet with SARA on a variety of levels. But about the settlement agreement itself, that's a slightly more structured issue, and obviously because of the complexities of the relationship and the disputes at the moment, there have been very structured and very formal engagements with Mr. Nyatera on this matter.
Thanks, Jefferson. I think the question from Mr. Makondo about when did you meet, and it is not just about meeting. It's because if you have an entity and you have disputes with them, disagreements, you need to meet them from time to time so that we can understand each other at the end. So, my question is, the terms of the agreement, the terms of the agreement for the renovation. Do they say give money to SARA and they must do it themselves, or do they say department must do the renovation? And where comes the issue of 10 million rand? Because DG said. In fact, we went beyond what was actually agreed upon.
Thanks. I think it is clear that this matter will not resolve because there is no willing. I don't know from both sides, but sitting here from part of the department to me, so that
they iron out those challenges that are there. And we all understand the character that we are dealing with. But holding back will not appeal. Surely there should be a commitment from the department. We sympathize with you. But it also becomes very difficult for us as a portfolio committee when we call you, you come here, you repeat yourself, everything. It doesn't happen. At least have a meeting. That's what you have to do. Thank you.
I think what the honourable members are saying is that as a portfolio committee, we can never condone wrongdoing. We can never say, go out there and do the wrong thing. We want you to do the right thing in accordance with the laws and within the legal framework. We know that sometimes you act outside the legal framework, and when that happens, we want you to bear the consequences of that. But we just want to hear you saying that we're trying. We want to see that you're trying. For instance, if you to discuss the agreement, you last discussed the agreement in April, and now we are in November. What was happening during the intervening period, the period between that time and this time? Because as you were saying, that there are a lot of interactions that are not discussing the actual agreement, but pieces of it. And I think it's important for us as the portfolio committee to be convinced that you didn't last speak about the agreement at the public protectors meeting, but there are, you know, meetings in the intervening period, so that at the end of it, you must show, when we say show your place, you must be able to say, we met on this day, this is what we discussed, and this is where we differed again, and this is what happened. Because we can't control, we can't say because you've done wrong with someone, you have to repeat to do the wrong thing. But I think what's important is, as Honorable Makonde and Honorable Mubega are saying, that we must see that there is this willingness to ensure that we bring this thing to rest. We really need that. We can't keep discussing the roses from 20 whatever until we leave this place. We can't discuss this thing. And I think also just to show a reason, because truly speaking, as the department, you can't be expected. And looking, for instance, at what Mr. Nyakela said in the last meeting that they were here, because they are not the entity of the department. This was our take in the last time, that you are not an entity. Would you want to be an entity? And they said, yes, we want to be an entity. Do you remember? Or am I not recalling it well? Yes, they said, look, the AC cannot fund your operational costs because you are not even their entity. And the issue of you saying that they have funded that one, it's wrong. We're going to deal with them if they have funded operational costs in another institution that is not their entity. It's wrong. They should not be doing that. But they said they wanted to be an entity. Have you taken that up with them to say, in the portfolio committee, you said they are prepared to be an entity of the department? What is the process? What does it take for us to get there? I think you need to engage at different levels, because we know that it's not easy
but nobody said it was going to be easy. But we need to bring it to rest. We can't go on like this.
Chairperson, would we hear the frustration of the portfolio committee? One of the challenges has been that in the meeting that we had with the DPP in April, there was an agreement to the terms as presented by the DPP. And then there was a rescinding from that position. So that's one of the challenges that we have, is that as we move forward, we move back. We hear the committee's view that there should be more engagement, and we shall certainly give it our best shot. I'm sure you can understand how complex and difficult these engagements are at a personal and an organizational level because of the nature of the relationship, which is old and difficult and very, very fractious. But it's also exceptionally difficult to be engaged with a stakeholder who is of the view that the department's position to SARA should always be in able to support its requests. And that's really where some of the real difficulties between us start to emerge, is that when requests are received and the DAC, for a variety of different reasons, is unable to consider those requests, that's when things can turn very, very difficult. And that's when the barrage of emails follows along with social media, etc. So we hear the committee. This is an incredibly old and incredibly difficult relationship. And it's quite frustrating to be working from our side to make sure that we implement the settlement agreement, but not necessarily finding a winning partner on the other side. And that's really where the notion of to me, the crux of the issue is that the DAC is doing everything it can, with perhaps the exception of ongoing interactions, but there does not seem to be similar effort on the part of the South African Royalties Association. So we will certainly try, Chairperson and members of the committee, but it is a work in progress because it is a hugely complex issue. The issue of the renovation is, when it first came forward in 2013, it was a request for 39 million to renovate SARA House. As part of the settlement agreement, it was agreed that the IDT, the Independent Development Trust, would do an assessment of the building. That was done. And on the basis of that assessment, which indicated that the building was beyond its functional life, the DAC, in fact, refused the request for funding. Subsequently, that was amended to a 10 million rand grant allocation on the condition that this transfer would be made directly to the South African Royalties Association. The Royalties are of the view that the settlement agreement compels the department to actually implement this work on its behalf. Now, from the department's perspective, we have a legal opinion procured through the state attorneys, which indicates that that element of the settlement agreement is not enforceable. And we have proposed a different solution, which is very similar to how we work with other entities of the department, and in fact with other entities who apply to us for capital works funding, in that we will provide the grant directly to the beneficiary organization to administer the funds on their behalf. This matter was discussed and ventilated in the discussion with the Deputy Public Protector in April. We were of the view that we had moved forward in the relationship at that point, to the point where SARA was prepared to accept the grant. However, that perspective, that stance changed. And subsequently, we've been in a fairly circuitous round of correspondence and counter-correspondence about this particular issue. And so that continues to be the largest and most difficult sticking point, is the renovation project. The DAC is not of the view that it is appropriate for it to take on this work itself, because we don't do this for any other organization. And that we're of the view that the work can be done very successfully through a transfer to the South African Royalties Association. And as the acting DG had pointed out, with an additional sum that would allow for the appointment of architects, project managers, etc., which would facilitate this work. However, SARA continues to emphasize that in their view, the DAC is not fulfilling the terms of the settlement agreement. And so this is really where things can become very difficult at meetings, because the starting point is always the point of dispute and not necessarily the point of progress. But
we are aware of all this, of all what you're saying. But I think what we are saying as the portfolio committee, the meeting that, for instance, I said earlier that for you to have had that meeting then, and we are going for December now, and we haven't had a meeting looking at the issue. And I think you need to ensure that, for instance, you do have your legal opinion, and I think this is one thing which I think that legal opinion, taking it to our legal unit here as well, for them to look at, because whatever we do, as I said earlier, should be within the framework of the law, should be within the legal framework. And so that we need to find a way of putting this thing to rest. We can't discuss this all our lives. And I mean, it's counterproductive to do this. So we need to ensure that we find a way of dealing with it and look at the, in conversation with SAVA, being as difficult as it is to do that conversation, we consult with them. We tell them that this is how we operate. This is the law within, this is the law within which we are operating. And going against this will mean that we are transgressing. So I know it's not easy, but we need to find a way of bringing this to to rest. Honorable Police?
You just said my race, really, because I was saying we really need to get the closure of the matter because we have an opportunity of listening to him making a presentation. We have been presented this over and over and over every time. So really we need to conclude. Maybe also our legal department here has to move with speed, because we can't be getting in another financial year with a problem that is overlapping from the previous financial year. Remember, it was not even a matter of this year. It was a matter that is overlapping from last year. We really need to apply, I would say what I said at that time, let's apply the legislation that is needed. All the issues that is raising that, because this has been done in the left-hand side, it needs to be done in the right-hand side, we can't be in that situation as a portfolio committee chair. So let's close the matter really as soon as possible.
Another
comment there?
Chairperson, I just underlined this statement from the speaker when she says, in the agreement, there is this clause that says DAC must do it. And according to the legal opinion, the court is not enforceable. So they agreed to it. Afterwards, the violence is not enforceable. So I think that's where Mr. Yatela is holding. This was an argument. The legal opinion came after, whereas they already agreed. But as we have already said, the development was from that. Doesn't matter how aggressive the man is. He was from time to time calling to the meeting, sit down with them, talk to them, and you'll see. You will compromise, they will compromise. But this thing of distance, letters, and all that, it is damaging your own, what you call, it's tools as a department. You see, because now, as we are talking now, he's busy writing to the speaker now. And I said, all that thing is coming to what? To the department. And then everybody that is having a potential to help him, you go to him and remember about your name. You rather talk to the person so that he doesn't talk to other people, he can talk to you. But the distance you're keeping between the, you and them is making them frustrated so that they can seek for help anywhere. And as public leaders, we cannot sit down on the issues from the public. We will always help. So, please, DG, make an appointment with Mr. Ngatela, and then if you need any one of us to be present in that meeting, that's all. Listen, still fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
Can I also ask, maybe Jabu should also give Honourable Moseka the whole information pertaining the whole Ngatela issue, because some of us were a little bit far with the issues that are happening in that department. But also, Chairperson, I wouldn't want us to say I don't want to use the word compare to necessarily, because you will remember how aggressive Freddy is. I remember we were in this room and you could see that you jump and kill Monique. It's just that Honorable Mzika was not there. So when they do that, we must also be conscious that we didn't want to compare the department in a situation whereby there's going to be blood at the end of the day. So like I'm saying, let's get all the necessary information, respond to all or what Freddy is saying. I don't know whether you are able to get emails that come from Freddy.
I have information.
You have okay. Emails, you're not getting emails from Freddy.
I'm getting emails.
From Freddy?
Yes.
Okay. Please, let's rest the situation. Let's get the legal opinion and get the opinion from our side. Actually, we also made a recommendation in the portfolio. Because now, if we have made a recommendation and we come back and always re-recommend, already not implementing the recommendation that we made as this portfolio committee, then we would have a problem. Because the matter has to come to a conclusion.
Thank you very much,
Honourable
Member. Do you want to say something? Or are you taking the recommendations of the
portfolio? I think that's the last point that has been made by the Honourable Portfolio. I think more amenable to it, because the reason why we haven't been following up in terms of community, I think it's easy to meet, you know, with the person where even if you differ, you can argue. But there is no element of our agreement. We can meet with anyone who differs with us. But as long as that is within, it can be controlled, that it doesn't tend to be physical. Now we don't know how, you know, this meeting might actually turn up. We will think about what we might want to do in order to resolve it. But I wouldn't really say here in the committee that we will be meeting with. We will see how we can try and do that. But of course, taking cognizance of our own safety and security.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Member,
Honorable
Member, Honorable that are coming out from what the members are saying. Let's look at, because this issue, as it was said earlier, it's something that we have been discussing. For instance, for the benefit of Honorable Mudeka, when we started discussing the issue in the agreement, as the portfolio committee, we identified areas that were illegal. So it's department. You don't deal with infrastructure. It's the Department of our Public Works that deals with infrastructure issues. The Department of Agriculture has no business to deal with infrastructure. So there were those areas. And we're saying when they got into the agreement, they didn't apply their mind.
not at all. And that is not the fault of the other party. But now they have a responsibility of working within the principles of the law. So I think it's important that, I don't know how we can convince Mr. Nyathela to say, take advantage of the extra 5 million so that you are able to utilize it to get, you know, the expertise that is needed to deal with infrastructure so that we get on with the work of renovating the building. In the first place, the Department of Public Works has said the building is, what's the term that they use? And we ask, why did you in the first place agree to put in money in the structure that the Department of Public Works has said it was not good? So it's just there. And but it has happened, and we could not reverse the time. But what we are saying is that both parties should find a way of ensuring that the agreement is done and we carry on with the agreement, but we need the understanding of both parties, you know, so that this can be done. We need to ensure that it happens, and we need to carry on. But as it was next year, for instance, Utrecht is taking a lot of money from departments. So departments are going to be top line, and as the department is being top line, it's going to top line on other programs, and this will be affected as well. So the sooner, I think the sooner they take it, the sooner it will assist them, because everybody is going to feel this economic downturn. We are encouraging you to do whatever you can to bring the matter to rest, but we will look at the legal opinion, and we will ask our own legal unit to look. Hey, no matter who is it, because we have so many legal issues that we take to them. But we'll ask them to look at the and then we'll come to a conclusion and come with concrete recommendations after we've done that. I think those issues, do you want to say something?
So maybe, Chairperson, because to include only medium the account, we also advise. You know, it is very important that if you came across any issue, you take out yourself out of it and then you deal with it as an office. Don't ever make anything personal. Because if you can check, we are not talking about Sarah alone. There are a lot of issues. Forensic thief report, this and this and this. All these things are out of doing things personal sometimes. We just passed the presentation now about the current day, the board that was appointed and all that. All those things, it means the law is not considered, the procedures are not considered and all that. How do you agree to build it, whereas you know you are not the builder? All those things. So please, in order to reduce all these crises, you must always act professional. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Honorable Modeka. And as you said, the portfolio committee, this portfolio committee took that resolution from the onset that we are not yet to discharge only the mandate of overseeing the department, but to advise as well, to say, you know, to support you. Because it's not about us as the portfolio committee. At the end of the day, it's about the people that we are serving. We are going to put this matter to rest, and we are going to excuse you as the department, but please, we are asking you to do the right thing all the time and ensure that you work within the legal framework so that you don't find yourself in trouble. We are now going to excuse you until we meet again. God, you need to see me meet again. And
around the glass.
Honourable members, we are not going to look at the set of minutes today, but we just will report to honourable members that the discussions that we've been having in the portfolio committee on draft 103, we had an opportunity as chairperson to meet with the auditor general, and I raised the issue in the chairperson's meeting with the AG, and the AG was really excited to hear that the portfolio committee on arts and culture has discussed about this, and he actually welcomed the recommendation of the portfolio committee that we have a meeting with the treasury, with them, and us, so that we look at the issue of Craft 103. And the Auditor General was saying as well that he's grateful that the committee has detected that the Craft 103, you know, was done. It was not well thought before it was implemented, because it's bringing more trouble than bringing solutions. So he said that the sooner we organize that meeting, it would be good to have treasury with us and them as AG and with us, so that we see how we can deal with the issue of Craft 103. And there is also a report here on the joint oversight in KZN. And I'm hoping that members will look at the report, because we'll be having a joint meeting that is still going, probably the 30th, because we want that report to be ATC before the before Parliament, right? So I think you have the report in your, when we had a meeting last week and we looked at the issues, have you looked at the issues? Yeah, can you give a brief report on the meeting that we had? Yeah.
Okay, the oversight report for KZN, we are requested to adopt it for Parliament rising. The last week we met with the chairperson of tourism and the group from environmental affairs to discuss the report. The tourism committee indicated that they don't have a problem with the report itself, and that's why the committee was requested, the Arts and Culture committee was requested to have a look at the report and make any changes to it before we meet to discuss the actual the finalized report in the meeting as a joint a committee that attended undertook the oversight. So members are requested to make any changes. We were just requested to just insert change a few words in the report by the chair, but members are requested to do that before the end of the week, hopefully, so that I can make the changes from Arts and Culture side and then submit to the bigger group for adoption, hopefully on the 30th of November.
Are there any questions on our members on that? Are there any questions? Are we okay with that? We look at the report, especially the area on arts and culture, to see if there are any changes that have to be done. But what was raised there as well was that if we have we need to look at the cluster activities, because sometimes we go into a cluster and we come out as portfolio committee. The report is like, this is the recommendation for arts and culture, for tourism, for whatever. So we need to also look at that. I think if we can, in that meeting of the 30th, when we're going to adopt, come up with suggestions of how we can ensure that this cluster, you know, operates as a cluster, not as individuals within the cluster. So I think if you can come up with recommendations as well in that meeting. Honourable members, I want to thank you very much for your contribution, especially for availing yourself and for your
contribution and the robust questioning, I think it's important that whoever comes to the meeting knows that this committee is about doing its job without fear or favor. I thank you very much for that. And now the meeting is adjourned. During the weekend, there's a wedding. Who's going to the wedding? We need to have this invitation. Who's going?
Master is going, I know. my condo is going, AM is going. The person I'm going.
If I need to, I have to go for check on Friday.
No, there's a way to answer the family. It's too far, maybe you need to
attend. Okay. Yeah, I have to go for check on Friday morning. So I'm going to ask the aunt. I'm going to ask the aunt. I'm going to ask the aunt. Thank you, Honourable Member.
Thank you.
That's why I'm here, I'm here, I'm here.
Okay.
Okay, okay, next week I'm going to... You know, next week,
Have you called both the issues?
With who? The
court
room. I have one.
Job.
The door. Yeah, but I was asking myself, because I was asking
I'm tired. I can't see. I just see that.
Maybe
Harry
House
thing
had a house.
No,
we are.